All right, welcome back to another episode of The Flip Side with your host, me, Blake Schultz. I've got a good friend of mine, Thomas Cox, today. Thanks for being here.
So glad to be here. It's great.
So, Thomas, we've known each other for a couple months,
yeah.
But I feel like we're pretty good friends. I know you as a business owner, entrepreneur, retired football coach, father, strong Christian, and I love getting to know you, and so I'm excited to dive in today about all of those aspects and any other surprises you have for me.
It's going to be great.
Before we talk about where you're at now, take me back a little bit. Where'd you come from?
So born and raised in Birmingham, from the time I was five, knew what I wanted to do for a living. I did. I wanted to be a college football coach. And so my life was predicated around that. Grew up in a really strong Christian home. Parents were divorced, but parents were still around. So I knew I was going to coach college football. So a lot of what I did was based around sports. My dad is in the Hall of Fame in the state of Alabama as a high school football coach.
I know.
Got to play for him my senior year and then went on to play at UAB. I was in school. I was not a grade kid, not a great reader in high school, not a great student in high school. I was a 3.0 kid, made like 17 on the ACT. Like just, I was there to play ball. Not in a like malicious negative way. A lot of common sense, but then just was there to play ball. So go to college, played at UAB. Absolutely love Birmingham. But when I graduated, I knew that I needed to go do something else. And so I could not find a college job. And so I went to Atlanta and got to coach with my dad. So my dad retired, go to Atlanta, and loved that. Loved coaching with him. So during that time, that was the start of I'll marry the stories. That was the start of the financial journey. So my parents were both school teachers growing up. Incredibly middle class, lived paycheck to paycheck, lots of debt, all that world. When I was 18 years old, graduated from high school, I got $2,000 from graduation, just random $20 bills and $50 bills from people. And a guy in the church, and I'm so ashamed to say this, I don't remember the guy's name, said, "Give me $1,000. I said, "What are you going to do with it?" He goes, "I'm going to invest it for you." I said, "In what?" He said, "The stock market." I was like, "Okay, great." And he said, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to send me $20 a month." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I want you to set up a draft in your checking account. I want you to send me $20 a month." He said, "If you make more money, send me more money." I said, "Great." At 18, I did that. And I did not realize that's one of the probably top five decisions I ever made. Finding Jesus, marrying my wife, and doing that at 18 were incredibly important. So I did that, and then I go to live in Atlanta with my dad. And if at that point, I just save a ton of money because I graduated from college. I don't have any debt because I was on scholarship. And I worked. That's all I did. I taught school, coached in the afternoon, cleaned buildings at night with a friend. So all I did was work. My fiance or girlfriend at the time was in Alabama, so I didn't have her to distract me.
Yeah.
So we did that. So in there 2 years, getting off the plane for my honeymoon, get a call from a college coach that we knew that offered me a job. So we coach at NC State. We're at NC State for a few years, get fired from there. Not me, the whole staff. So it's, in college football, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So we get fired. Then I then go and coach at Tennessee Tech for the guy that coached me in college, Watson Brown, who's here from Birmingham. So I did that for a while and loved it. Problem was, in college football, it's very, very hard to have a family and be a great father. There are college football coaches that are great dads, but it was a struggle because we worked so much. Did that for a while, loved it. My wife loved it. My wife was a coach. I was a coach. We had two kids at the time.
And what was she coaching?
She was the head volleyball coach at Cookeville High School.
Okay.
She's an incredible volleyball coach. She's been doing it over 20 years at this point today as we sit here. But she lost like one region game in 8 years as a head coach in Tennessee.
Wow.
She's incredible. And then I get a call from the Lord to like get out of coaching. But the problem was, is God will call you to certain things, but God will call you out of other things as well. So I felt God calling me out of coaching. But the problem is I didn't know what he was calling me into. And that's really, really difficult to be obedient there because there's no next step. So I worked at a church, got a guy that offered me a job, said, "Come help me." He was a former athlete too. I was like, great. So I worked at a church for 2 years. 6 months later, guy comes in my office. My boss says, "Can you help me with a meal plan?" Let me backtrack. During my time coaching there, I got really involved in CrossFit back in the day. Like before, CrossFit is on its way down at this point as we sit here in 2025. But in 2008, 2009.
It was hot. Bro, it was new.
It was hot. And I just happened to live in the mecca of CrossFit. I lived in Cookeville, Tennessee. I lived there, loved it. And got really involved, drank the Kool-Aid. And so when you get involved in CrossFit and you drink the Kool-Aid, they force nutrition down your throat. So I learned lots about nutrition just by default. I have a history degree, don't have a culinary degree, but I learned about food. And I started doing meal plans for this guy. And just like anything, that just mushroomed. you know, fast forward 2 years later, I quit the church, start doing catering. I got 20, you know, thousands of people that do our meal plans in 27 different countries. This is before you could find a meal plan on Google in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So that grew. We started catering. Then we opened up a small restaurant in Tennessee. Then we start. So in Tennessee, we grow that business for 5 years. We get a call to come do the food for Highlands College. So we do the food. Now, so let's get to current day. So currently we do the food for Highlands College. We have two different catering companies, Meal Fit and Table and Time. And we have a vending business that we have. That is the food part of my life. Back in 2017, one of my best friends, John Pattison in Tennessee, he and I decided that all of our friends, so this is positive peer pressure, all of our friends started owning rental houses, buying a rental house here, buying a rental house there, and all that stuff. And so I saw a video, and everybody knows who Grant Cardone is. I saw a video back in 2016, 17, whatever. He looked in the camera and he said, why would I buy one house when I can buy an apartment complex and have 20 houses under one roof? It's almost like that single video or that single line in the video, it clicked in my brain. And at that point, I never even looked at buying single family homes.
Defining moment.
It really, really was. Yeah. And I hate to say that one of my defining moments was Grant Cardone because I think he's great, but like, you know, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
So we bought an apartment complex in 2017, but the way we were able to buy it was that money that I put in the market at 2000, when I was 18 years old.
That's awesome.
And so I just dollar cost averaged, mm-hmm. and we talked about that on our podcast. Mm-hmm. I dollar cost averaged all those years, and it just grew. It just grew. And so I used some of that money to buy our first apartment complex. Mm-hmm. We moved to Birmingham. After we moved to Birmingham, we bought another one in Jacksonville, Alabama. And then 2 years later, I bought another one myself. So we owned some multifamily, mm-hmm. got really involved in the real estate and investing game. So we own multifamily. We've started a couple funds and didn't raise some money for different investments. And then here's about three or four years ago, we got really involved in infinite banking and cash value life insurance and that whole process. And that's really been our focus the last 2 years for me. Now, we still own the catering businesses, but we structured that a little bit differently the last 2 years to where I don't have to do as much with that. Mm-hmm. I still manage it. I'm still there involved in contracts and things like that. But from the day-to-day standpoint, I don't mess with it. The bulk of my time right now is spent on real estate and finance. And I really, really love that world.
That's awesome. So much to unpack. Yeah. So I'm excited to get into it. So going back, so starting the meal plan, that was focused around fitness meal plan, so healthy eating.
Right.
Is that what the meal plans that you grew that went countrywide, worldwide, and then went into a restaurant and catering business, was all that the same type of healthy, clean, fresh, or was it just, hey, whatever the demand is, we're frying chicken? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So everybody thinks it was centered around fitness, and it was, but our goal with the meal plans was I want to help busy moms. Mm-hmm. That was the target. It was busy moms, mm-hmm. because we were busy. And you typically solve a problem that you have.
Yeah.
The rental business. Yeah. Like I can name three or four of them for you. Mm-hmm. You typically solve a problem that you have. And so we were, you know, running in four different directions. And I always wanted to eat healthy because of the CrossFit background. What I would do is I would set up these meal plans, these recipes, and then I would make a grocery list. And that's really what it was. It was recipes with a grocery list so that Blake's wife could print it off, add whatever she needed, add toilet paper and, you know, peroxide and rubbing alcohol and whatever, and then go to the grocery store and she's got her list. That was my goal, and that's who I targeted. Well, then all the moms in Cookeville, where I live, were like, hey, we see your food. It looks amazing. But we're not buying your meal plan. But if you ever started making it, we'd buy it. So then we started meal prep. Mm-hmm. And this is before meal prep.
Yeah.
And I got pictures, Blake. It was bonkers. I got pictures of the line out the door on Sunday night.
When people started at your house?
I did not start at my house. I started in a rented, and I told this story 2 days ago. Kevin Bowling, who I owe so much to, he's in Cookeville, Tennessee. Kevin Bowling allowed me to use his ranch kitchen. It was like his property he had. He had a commercial kitchen there. He let me use it, and it got me started. Okay. So I owe Kevin Bowling so much. 2-3 months into doing that, I left the gas on at night. He comes back in and says, hey, bro, I love you. You're a brother in Christ. He said, but you got to go.
Yeah.
And he says, I can't risk it. I was like, fair enough. He gave me another week, and I had to leave.
Yeah.
Mike Campbell, who was a pastor at a church, let me use his commercial kitchen in his church, charged me for that. And then a friend of mine said, hey, there's this barbecue joint out here in the middle of nowhere. You want to rent it? I was like, yeah, sure. No heat, no air, 440 square feet. Froze our butt off in the winter. You know, sweated our face off in the summer, and then it grew from there.
Out of that barbecue hut.
Out of that little barbecue joint.
Yeah.
Yep.
could people come? It was just come pick up meals. It wasn't like a come sit down restaurant.
When we first started, Blake, in that barbecue joint, it was so out in the sticks that I had to deliver. So I was delivering to people's homes, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And then we got to the point where we couldn't do that anymore. I had this guy that was referred to me and said, hey, you need to go talk to this guy named Chad. And so Chad came out and said, hey, I'm going to look at your operation. So he just kind of observed for like 45 minutes. He's like, hey, I got an idea. He's like, why don't you come and take our spot downtown? We got two restaurants downtown. Mm-hmm. One's thriving, one's floundering. You don't need it as a restaurant. You just need a bigger kitchen and space. And it's centralized. Why don't you use it? I was like, I can't afford a place like that. He's like, I think you can. Well, he was renting from a guy that was a true slumlord. I mean, the power bill was more than the rent. It was so poorly done in the building, but it was great for me.
Yeah.
And that's when we really took off because people started seeing it. And I was there 3 or 4 months. It's like, hey, I got to open up something. And so I was, you could see the university and the hospital from my front door. It was we turned it into a salad bar type thing where it's like, you know, like Whole Foods.
Yeah.
You weigh it. Yeah. We did that mm-hmm. during the week, and we had meal prep on the weekend, and we made a lot of money.
So you stopped deliveries altogether.
We stopped deliveries altogether, and we just started doing that, and people were picking up on Sundays, and it was great. And I'm going to go back to this from a financial standpoint. We were strapped because my wife was working part-time, teaching and coaching part-time, and I was making, you know, $60,000 a year coaching. Well, I started working at the church making like 35. Mm-hmm. So we took a huge pay cut. So a wife and two kids are living off 55 grand a year.
Yeah.
We lived on that budget even when we started the business. So the first year we did meal plans, it made about $8,000. The second year I made about 80. Mm-hmm. Third year we doubled to 165. Fourth year we were at, you know, 350. And we doubled for 3 or 4 years straight. And but we kept our household budget at that dollar amount, and we just stacked a lot of money, Blake. Mm-hmm. We just saved it before I knew anything about investing and diversifying and things like that. We saved so much money, and it is what propelled us to do what we do now.
And that was with deliveries. When you had that the highest gross income was at that delivery, so shutting that down, turning it to the restaurant, was the restaurant doing that well as well?
Yeah, we didn't lose money. We were open 11 to 2, like,
oh wow,
just lunch.
Okay.
And it was no, you couldn't sit down, so we were 5 days a week, 11 to 2.
You ran, and it was lean, I guess.
Very, very lean.
Yeah.
Now, it grew. The problem is this, is when you get to a certain point, you think you need to add stuff to make more money. When you add stuff to make more money, you have to incur more cost. You have to pay more people. You have to buy more crap. As everybody says, they want all these other things, but then they typically go back to what they know and love. And so we were still making money, but it was really cyclical. When school was in, bro, we were killing it. When school was not in, we were floundering because, you know, 10,000 people in a town of 30,000 people. Or there were 10,000 more people in town when the students were there. Not because it was all students that were coming in, but there were a lot of students. But people, just like here, people love rhythm. So a gym and a church and meal prep are the same. Let me explain. Gyms, churches, and meal prep thrive August to December. Then they thrive January to May. Why? Because school system. School is in. People in a rhythm have their habits. So I'd see the same freaking people every day, bro, at the restaurant. When school was out, the Smiths are on vacation this week. The Joneses are on vacation this week. The Schultz are on vacation this week. And so there was never any consistency when Christmas vacation, summer vacation. I realized then I'm one of the lucky few that didn't just get my butt handed to me by a restaurant. I realized this is not sustainable. This is not how I want to make my money. And so I figured out, it's not a light bulb moment, but I figured out that I want when we make money in the food business, I want to have the money accounted for before I buy the food. Mm. Catering, meal prep was all the same thing. Now here I have the vending business, and the vending business is very, very low waste. Mm-hmm. Figure out what the people want, and it's been pretty good.
Yeah, I want to talk about that as well. But before we switch into that, restaurant is seemingly the riskiest business to get into. Everyone says avoid it from a just business entrepreneurial standpoint. What's your take on that? You had a successful one. You kind of saw the writing on the wall, you said.
Yeah, sure.
But would you encourage or discourage people to get into it?
In college, I had a job parking cars. And from the second semester in college all the way to the fifth year of college, I parked cars. Made a boatload of money. I mean, Blake, for a college kid, not like the college kids today and the NIL stuff, but like I'd make $300-$500 a week. And just like, I didn't spend my, I just made a bunch. Some weeks I'd make $1,000. I just made a bunch of money. But I got to park cars at a place called Highland Bar and Grill and Bottega. And so if you're in Birmingham, you know that those are the two of the best restaurants in Birmingham. And Frank Stitt, who was a friend of my dad's, has been around. He's won a James Beard Award. During the late 90s, early 2000s, and even if it both were open today, they'd still be one of the top restaurants in Alabama. And I worked there. And so I remember like it was yesterday, Blake. I remember sitting there at midnight one night after I got off my shift, and the same bartenders were there for 20-something years. And I looked at the menu because I never went to places like that growing up because we couldn't afford it. And I remember looking at the menu, and I remember seeing a steak for $63. Now, this is in 2001-ish. It's a lot of money. And I go, bro, Frank's making so much money off this food. And he goes, he ain't making it off the food, Thomas. He's making it off of this. And he picks up a martini glass. He said, this martini costs $17.
In 2001.
In 2001.
That's crazy.
He goes, Frank ain't making money on, he makes a little money on the food. He said, Frank's not losing money on food. Frank's making a killing on booze. And I was like, I get it. I get why these people are in here until 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning. Bro, 12 o'clock at night, 4 or 5 nights a week, that bar was full.
Yeah.
Because when you drink, I don't drink, but when you drink, you want to drink more. And it just keeps going and going and going. Yeah. So from a restaurant, that's a long answer to a short question. From a restaurant's perspective, I do not believe a restaurant is a good business. There are a lot of people out there that make a lot of money doing it. But the time is incredibly intensive, and it's extremely risky. Bad weather, different things come up. You're not gonna be full. So I don't think it's a great. I talked to a guy last week about wanting to start a restaurant. I was like, nah, bro, don't do it.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm out if you do it.
Yeah. I just finished Unreasonable Hospitality.
It's a great book. Will Girardi, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Dude's a G. It's a great book. But the concept of the book is wonderful. And if you've never read that, I'd recommend highly reading it. But it's a great. But he makes millions of dollars, but he's a restaurant guy.
Yeah. So what I liked about my biggest takeaway was he went in from when he was 22 years old with one goal. Be the number one restaurant in the world.
Yep.
Period. That was it.
That's it.
That was his only goal, and that was his only focus for running it for, 15 years. And he hit it.
Yep.
Spoiler alert. But it wasn't about the money to him. And I think that's, I've never been in restaurants, but it's got to be a passion project, right? And if you do it well and have clear and defined goals that maybe the outcome is money, but that's not the focus, that's not the input.
I think the problem with a lot of times is you can cook good. Everybody likes to your food, and then all of a sudden 14 friends say you need to open a restaurant, and then Susie opens a restaurant and it fails miserably. There's a big difference in being a chef and a business owner,
right?
And the ones that can do that both well are elite.
Yeah,
but there aren't many.
Which it sounds like in the book he had a partner named Daniel who was the chef and he was the business,
owner.
Right? So, and that's
if you can have both of those, bro, it's a better deal. But like if you're just like you love cooking, barbecue, I mean, it's just a totally different animal.
Yeah.
The way you have to balance the food and the labor and all those things, it's mind-boggling.
So if you're an entrepreneur wanting to go out and start something to make money, restaurant's not the answer.
No.
There's a lot easier ways
to do it. Absolutely. There's so many other ways to do it.
Yeah. So. All right. So let's switch over to catering now. You've got a catering business. You serve Highlands College, which I'm assuming is fairly cyclical as well, because that's in and out of students in and out. So supplement that, you've got two catering companies that are independent, and then the vending business.
Yeah,
vending business intrigues me. Last time we met, we kind of dove into that. I want to talk about it as well. You were just launching into a new building, or you were adding a second machine into a building that was your top producer already. So catch me up.
So it's taken me about 3 years to figure this thing out. We were doing the meal prep thing. It's still in Birmingham. We were losing money, so I shut that down, and I saw this vending thing. And I probably saw it on a Facebook ad or something like that. And then I talked to the people at the company, and I said, hey, you got anybody that does anything like this I can talk to? And he hooked me up with this girl in Texas. And this girl's probably 40 years old. She owns has a catering business like me in Texas. But she has like 20 machines, and she absolutely kills it. And so we got to be buddies. And she has taught me so much. Brittany, her name is Brittany. She has a company called Tome Catering in I can't remember the name of the city in Texas, and she's wonderful. But she's taught me how to do this. And so it's a refrigerator that's locked. It only opens when you swipe it and you put real food in there. Well, what we were doing is we were putting our meal prep in there.
Yeah.
We were adding things and figuring out how that goes. And so, but what we figured out, Blake, is that it needs to be places that are open 24 hours a day. foot traffic during the day of over 100 people. And the more hours that the people are circulating, the better you're going to be. U.S. Steel does really good. The hospitals do really good because there's people there 24 hours a day. And a lot of times in the hospital, for example, cafeteria closes at 2.
Yeah, and days and nights kind of don't matter, depending, right? Well, family and
no, it doesn't matter. Well, like, for example, our biggest, you know, purchase time is like 5:30 p to 2:30 a.
Yeah.
Because when Susie, who's a NICU nurse, she can't leave. And DoorDash doesn't run at 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. So she comes down there and gets our food. And I don't want to make this thing like esoteric or anything like that, but I feel like we're doing a great thing for those people because it's great food and they enjoy it and it's relatively healthy food.
Yeah. Well, who hasn't been, you know, spent time with a loved one in the hospital sitting there for 2 days and you have to go out to a vending machine and get a bag of chips because nothing's open, right? I mean, that's where with the surgery I had a couple months ago, like I was in the hospital for 3 days. Rachel went home once, but was basically there with me the whole time.
Oh, sure.
And having something like that for her would have been...
Been a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd see that. We didn't talk about hospitals last time. Are you in any hospitals?
Yeah, we're at a bunch of different hospitals. We're in St. Vincent's East, UAB, Maine, downtown, UAB Highlands, St. Vincent's Maternity. I think that's it.
Okay.
It's our most consistent and best revenue.
Yeah.
Just simply because being there and you've got people there all the time.
Yeah.
Again, 24 hours a day. That's the key.
You learned some consistency probably with the rate. You said the waste is pretty low. So you've got people on routes running, stocking daily, every other day, and you know pretty close what the demand is.
The machines are pretty high tech as far as like you can see what's in there. But like I'll give you an example. UAB Highlands is going to be different than UAB Maine. And St. Vincent's East is going to be different than U.S. Steel simply because of the people that are there. And so I tell everybody, hey, it's going to take me 3 or 4 weeks to figure out what you guys like. U.S. Steel is not a salad place. They love salads at UAB Highlands.
Yeah.
Like you just got to figure out what they are. And then also, as costs rise, what do you have to get rid of? Mm. This is an item that people like, but they don't love it. So we can get rid of this item because it's only a 30% margin.
Yeah.
So it's just it's a game, a little bit of a game. And trying to figure that out, that's where you can really make money is when you figure out that they love these things. They love these things. They hate these. Don't put these there because you're going to waste those.
Yeah. So, is that an arm of your business that you love where it's at, just kind of keep it going, or is there a growth strategy and a rocket ship fuel going into that soon?
There's a growth strategy, but anything with the food business, Blake, I am not rocket shipping. Mm-hmm. We are growing 8 to 12% a year. It's very consistent. I love it.
Yeah.
But again, I don't put forth so much effort into that business because of the other things that we do that I enjoy more.
Yeah.
And so at 45 with 3 kids, and my time is extremely valuable, I want to do the things that I enjoy doing more as opposed to the things I have to do more. And look, I've worked my butt off since I was 18. I feel like I can do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and you got enough going on where you can pick and choose.
Sure. Absolutely.
This is the thing. Okay. Cool. All right. So that's catering. That's the food world. Let's switch over to, let's get into real estate.
Yeah.
A little bit. So you've got 3 apartment complexes. 2 of them you have a partner with, 1 of them you own in person, just outright. Talk about the management of those.
Yeah.
That's a thorn in my side that has never gone away in all my investing career.
Sure.
A lot of that's my fault. Yeah. So it's something we haven't talked about before. So how do you manage
I think you have a little bit more of a control issue than I do.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. It's just the way we're wired. I don't want the control. I don't take the money from the apartment complexes. I don't have to have the money to pay my power bill.
Right.
I don't have to have it. And so I am willing to give up the 7-8% that I pay to the management company for them to fool with it. Mm-hmm. I get a text message when people move out and says, Blake's moving out, the rent's $750. We recommend staying at $750. No, make it $775. Like, that's the extent of what I do. Mm-hmm. I got a text last night, hey, something's leaking in 201. I'm gonna call Michael. Great. That's it. Like, mm-hmm. I do everything. I haven't been to the apartment, any of the 1 apartment complexes in like 3 years.
Are they in the same area? We have the same company?
Three different companies. One of them is a great, the one in Jacksonville and the one in Cookeville, Tennessee, are managed by 2 different people. They both do a good job. Could one of them be better at some things? Yeah. But like, they do a good job. Mm-hmm. The one in Scottsboro, a guy lives in one of the apartments, he gets a discount and I pay him a fee to manage it, does a heck of a job. So like, I don't fool with any of it.
Are all those 3 companies/people the original that you found, or did you go cycle through some first?
Yeah, they're all original.
Really?
Yep. Now, for the first year in Tennessee, first year and a half in Tennessee, John managed it, my partner, because we wanted to save the 8 or 9%. And we got to a point where he called and said, hey, dude, I'm done. I want you to buy me out. I was like, what's wrong? He's like, I'm done. I'm tired of fooling with it. Because I moved to Birmingham 6 weeks after we sold, bought him. I said, wait. Let's look at the numbers. Let's just hire somebody to do it. He's like, okay. So we hired somebody to do it, and it's been great. Yeah. Now, he handles the there's a couple bills that got to be paid every now and again. He handles that. I handle Jacksonville. He handles the Cookeville ones, and I do, obviously, my own. Mm. But, like, it's really, like, we'll go 2 weeks and not even talk sometimes. We text a lot, but sometimes we don't even talk about them. You know, we paid the down payment on both of them, and for the first time in 8 years, we had to make a small payment because we had a massive leak. We had to pay like $8,000 a piece.
Yeah.
And so, for the most part, I've had them for 8 years. They've doubled in value, and I've not had to do anything with it.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Is the intent to hold them forever?
Yeah. Like, we had an offer 2 months ago, and for the guy to give me $100,000 more, I'd have probably taken it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is right now, where we sit in the market, it's like, it's really hard to 1031 it into something without getting crushed by with an interest rate or whatever. So, by the way, off camera, I do want to talk about, if you ever buy anything in Tennessee, I've got a awesome situation for you.
Okay.
So, from a rate standpoint.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yep.
All right. I'm open to it.
Yep.
My issue with management, so I have management companies on probably 60% of my portfolio.
So, you're managing 40% of your portfolio?
30.
Why?
Well, those I've set up. So, here's
hear me setup. Out, Thomas.
What had happened? Yeah. All right, so the stuff that I manage is small. The biggest thing I manage is, I think, a quadplex. The rest is all our commercial. No, I take that back. I'm sorry. Joe's Italian down in Pelham. I manage that.
But that's a restaurant, right?
Yeah. They lease my building.
But it's a triple net lease?
Triple net lease. Like I said, so this is my point is all the stuff I manage is not my headache because – I placed the tenants. I vetted them. I renovated almost all these spaces. I set it up to where I don't have to do much.
Sure.
Like, arguably, I do less on the ones that I manage than you do on the ones that you don't manage.
Yeah, sure.
I probably am pretty confident saying that. My issues are the ones I have managers on. Not all of them. Like, this building we're sitting in, J.H. Berry manages this. Incredible. Love it.
So, you own this building?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's my low-income stuff, which I'm trying to get out of anyways.
Sure.
But trying to find a manager, like my 10-unit apartment downtown, it has been less than 50% occupied for probably 2 years.
Oh, Blake.
And I'm on my third manager. Now, extreme ownership, right? I should be on my 10th manager by now and should be occupied because I need to pay full attention to it. And I haven't. But at the same time, it's just like
50%?
Yeah. It's just no.
Well, you got a great deal if you're not having to. If you're not losing money at 50% occupancy.
It's like breaking even with four people in it right now.
Bro.
We got a good deal. I mean,
that's a great deal.
It's a good deal. But at the same time, it could be cash flowing pretty well.
It could be cash flowing great.
Right? And so I missed a call yesterday with our PM. I'm going to call him today. And our call is, this is the third. Okay, so here's the thing. It was managed by someone for a while, for like 2 years. Finally let them go because they got bought. It just crashed and burned. Switch to a different one. They're like, okay, well, we actually just got bought too, but we've got, here's all the resources, sold me on like why it's better. Okay, here's your dedicated two people that are just going to kill it. They're the experts. Great. Okay, what is, and at the time we had two people in it.
What, out of 10?
Yeah. And I said, okay, here's my problem is I've been at like two for 6 months, and that's why I'm hiring y'all. When are we going to be full? I'm not giving you a date. You tell me. You give me a date. And this was probably 3 months ago, and they said September will be 10 out of 10. Okay.
Great.
Great. Since then, I haven't fired that company yet. I'm about to. I'm on my third expert because those two people left. They've been replaced. That person stuck around for 3 weeks. They've been replaced. Now I've got this new person in who's now an expert. I'm just like, I'm sick of this. Like, there's a reason they're not staying around. So
you almost want to put somebody in apartment two and say, hey, you manage this place.
Yeah. Well, where I'm at, this is my idea, and it's not fully, it's just my thought right now. Because I've got maybe 20 units that I manage myself. There's 10 that needs to be managed. There's two, a duplex in Hueytown. So maybe 30, 35 units that I could get off my plate.
Right.
That's not enough money to hire someone full-time to work for me.
No.
But it is enough for about a third of a person. so let me go find two more of me. The three of us split one person who we all agree how things need to be operated and do it that way. And I think I'd end up with more money in my pocket.
Okay,
and better.
Why don't you do the whole online thing? Are those markets small enough to where those people can't function and do it online? Meaning like
low income.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's there's a lot of.
Okay, have you thought about Section 8?
Yeah, I love Section 8.
You do love Section 8.
Yeah, I love Section 8.
I hate Section 8. Really? I've dove into it a little bit. I don't like it because I don't like all the inspection stuff. But again, different. Jason Long's one of my best friends. He loves Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he manages all his.
There may be one Section 8 tenant of those four in that one. And then I've got probably three or four other Section 8s that I manage. And again, some of my easiest people. Because they know, last I heard, this is an outdated stat, but there's an 8-year wait list in Birmingham to get a voucher.
Bro, they're begging people to have Section 8 stuff.
So these tenants know, if they don't take care of my property, I'm going to take care of it. But they're going to lose their voucher, and then they're homeless. Because they don't have enough money to pay a place, and they lost their voucher.
Can you get all of your units Section 8? Because you would solve your problem at that point.
Here's a whole other thing is why I need to take it over, which I don't want to but I need someone who will do it, because that was our conversation with this manager of turn them Section 8. They'll go $800 a month instead of market 700.
Yeah.
And I like it better. And they're like, oh yeah, we're applying. Okay. Well, it's been 4 months. What are we doing? It's just killing me. So anyways, I'm kind of ranting now, but it's just driving me nuts. So anyways, that's why I'm switching over to commercial, like retail, office, warehouse, flex, triple net.
Yeah,
I'm getting into that world. It's and the focus is just buy, not for cash flow, but for long term.
So you're at these low C properties.
I mean, this is as close to D without being D as you can get. Like, I'm not going there after 1 p.m. North Birmingham. You're walking to the new Coca-Cola Amphitheater. That's like the carrot for me. Is like, I don't want to sell it because hey, 10 years from now, but it's not right now.
So let me ask you a question. Have you thought about making some of these short term rentals? Have you thought about, because you have a construction background? Have you thought about taking some of these that are closer to the downtown market and making them short-term rentals? So let me say this. I got a buddy who is killing it in the midterm rental market. Everybody thinks travel nurses, but it's not just travel nurses. Mm-hmm. But, like, what about exploring that? Have you thought about that? Cause especially in your downtown. Like, if you could take your 10 units downtown.
The area's too rough.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah. I did short-term for a house I have in Southside, and it was okay. I actually had a buddy kind of arbitrage it because I didn't want to.
You didn't want to fool with it.
This is before my castle. So this is before I had systems. I probably could bump it back in. But I've got a long-term tenant in there. Cash flows, $400-$500. Yeah, let it roll. That's the one I manage. I talk to the dude twice a year.
Yeah.
Never hear from him.
Check just your deposit. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
So anyways, got me on my soapbox for property management.
I would love to explore the midterm rental world.
Yeah.
I don't love short-term rental. We talked about this on our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I have the place of the lake, Walcox Point, walcoxpoint.com. It's it's great, but like it's a legacy property. We're going to make a little money, but I don't invest it. Every dollar I spend goes back into the place. Like, it's not an investment.
What's a job? It's hospitality. It's like
it's
a restaurant.
It's hospitality, bro.
It's not passive.
Short-term rental is hospitality.
Yes.
It is not real estate. Unless you're arbitraging, it is hospitality.
Yes.
You got to have cookies. You got to have a handwritten note. You got to do all that bullcrap. Like, it's fine, but like, I don't want to do that. I think the midterm market is really intriguing.
Did I tell you about Jude, my son's house? We bought them a house for their college when they were born. Did I tell you about
love that concept?
Did I tell you about the insurance tenant we had?
No,
dude. Okay, so this house, it's by us in Bluff Park. 3-bedroom, 2-bath, going rates $2,500 a month for long term tenant. So we put it up.
Dang.
Yeah, but it's pretty good.
Hoover.
Our
Hoover
payments
system.
$1,900 a month. So you know we can cash flow $500-$600.
Yeah,
or our expense.
And that's one of your kids' houses.
Yeah, that's our son's house. So it'll be once he's old enough to pick up pine cones, he's gonna be out there. He's got to he's gotta earn it. But I put it up on the MLS for rent, $2,600, whatever it was, and I got a call from an adjuster. He goes, hey, would you be willing to take someone who needs it for 3 months? And I was like, not at this rate, because the time of year, if you put me in the wrong time of year at the end of that 3 months and I'm vacant for a while. So he was like, well, I was like, probably not at the $2,500 a month. He goes, well, at what rate? And he goes, this is a family in a couple of miles from me that had a house fire and they need it rebuilt. And it's a 3-month project. So they need a place to stay. And I said, well, it's not furnished. They said, we'll take care of the furnishing. Okay. He said, what's your rate? And I was like, I don't know. I go $5,125. And he goes, all right, cool. They'll do that. And I was like, shoot.
Dang it.
I should have said more.
Six.
And so 3 months turned into 8. And so for 8 months, I mean, we're making like $3,000 a month. And
have you thought, is there a system to where you can get back on that train?
Yes. So I put it on Furnished Finders once they moved out, which is midterm rental. That's like the main midterm rental site. Advertised it, put it on MLS as long-term and short-term, different prices. I mean, I was pushing hard because I was calling every adjuster. So I called insurance agents first. They said, great idea. We love that. We've got no say in that. The adjuster has the say.
And the adjuster works for the insurance company.
Yep. And they don't advertise their phone number, and agents don't like to give it out. And so that's the bottleneck I found. So long story short, I ended up finding a long-term tenant before I found another midterm. And I took it just because it's easy. Sure. Yeah, there is a play to build up there are housing placing companies nationwide, like I forget, CES or something like that is one of them, where you go and you register your property on their list. And so when they have someone who needs temporary housing, they can go in their database, and you've registered your house in their database. They can pull and say, oh, you want Hoover, at least 3 bedrooms, no pets, fence and yard, boom. And then they'll reach out and say, okay, what are you available? What's your rate? So I've registered on all those sites.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, there's big money in the insurance play.
Because it's not long-term. So like, just look at it. Long-term rental is $2,500 a month, taking the house example. Short-term rental is $300 a night, probably. $200 a night, like if you're doing Airbnb.
Yeah, 200 probably.
$200 a night.
Yeah.
So that's 6,000 a month. And then midterm is probably a sweet spot in the middle, probably closer to the upper end. So like you said, $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, I think the midterm rental market is great.
Yeah. There's a play there. Right now it's a shiny object for me, so I'm ignoring it.
That's what we talked about that.
because I've got too many other ideas.
Sure.
Some good, most bad. So I'm putting that aside, but knowing that, because at the same time, the Kidtopia we were talking about before we launched, that came with a house that I didn't
rent. I know. Who rented that, by the way?
Just a tenant. Just a.
What are you getting for that place? Because you were really particular about that.
Yes. So I want to sell it. My goal is to sell it to a friend. I'm not putting on market because I want to pick my neighbor.
You want to sell it to somebody that you know and love.
Yes. And so, which has been harder than I thought, because no one wants to move to a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. All of our group is like, we've got kids. So Chris Dixon, who's a friend of mine and a contractor, has quoted, hey, if we finish out the garage, here's the price. We can make it a 4-3. So anyways, that long term, trying to sell it, but got a tenant in there now. We're losing about $350 a month because my cold cost is high on it.
Why is your cold cost so high? Because it's so expensive?
Yeah. I mean, I overpaid for the house. But
you got the lot.
But I got the land. And that was the goal. I underpaid for the land. It all shook out about the same.
But so, $350 a month is not awful.
I mean, it's a lot better than the $3,000 I was losing when it was vacant.
Sure.
Right. So that was the goal, is just stick someone in there. He wanted a year. I committed to 6 months because I didn't want to lose that much for a year. 6 months ends next month, and I don't have anyone, so we'll probably just keep it up. Just month to month. Yeah.
And at that point, when he ever moves out, will you try to convert it?
I'm just going to try to get someone. So it's actually currently on Furnished Finders
right
now.
But what I'm saying is you're going to try to convert it to a 4-3.
Not preemptively. I'll do it when I find someone who wants it, and then they can pay the end price. And I'll build it for them under contract they mortgage, so they don't have to come up with the cash.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. So, I like it.
Okay. That was a lot about me. We're here to talk about you.
You're fine. You're fine. This is what a normal conversation looks like between the two of us.
Right. Hard to stay on topic. All right. So we talked about real estate. So let's get into the money side.
Yeah.
First, I want to get into the fund that you've done or multi different funds, and then get into the infinite banking concept. A fund has always intrigued me. I've raised money a couple times for my own projects, and then I've been a lender to just one or two friends when they flipped houses. And that, when I got a taste of being a lender, of just the ease of you have a 1-hour conversation, I do maybe 2 hours of like work on my real estate side to make sure it's a good deal, and then months later I get all my money back plus a really good return.
Sure.
I'm really interested in that because that's like super easy money from, I come from where you come from, of just hard work, and every dollar I've made was hard to get.
Yeah.
And so then I have that. I'm like, wow, that was really easy.
Yeah.
So
my dad tells us, I used to always ask him, my dad's passed away, is one of my best friends before he passed away, but he had a very, restrictive mindset, very, not restrictive. He had a very like, scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. And, I would want to go buy something or go on a trip or whatever. And he'd always say, hey, before you go spend that money, think about how many cars you had to park to get that money. and it would slow me down a little bit. Obviously, that'd slow me down now, but
yeah.
And I'm gonna give you two examples of like the last week. Okay, I loaned a guy $175,000 on a deal. It was supposed to take 6 months. He said 6 or 7 months. Well, every month after six, the rate goes up for me. Mm-hmm. And we were at month 12, and he had a massive interest bill, and I got it back yesterday. It was great. We got another guy that I did a deal. Me and Kendall, my buddy, split a house. Mm. He did some, I did some. The guy thought it was going to be 6 months. It's going to be like 8. Well, the rate went up 5% over those 2 months, and he sends me a message 2 days ago, and he saw where the price of the house that the guy's flipping has went down. He goes, hey, Coach, I guess the price went down. I guess that contract fell through. And I text back. I said, herein lies why we lend and we don't flip. I did a flip with a guy, a real estate friend of mine, linked me with a guy. And he said, this guy got the house super cheap. He wants a partner. Y'all flip it together. So we flipped it together, meaning I was the bank. He did the work. We were going to make 80 grand a piece. Mm-hmm. It was a cheap house. It was a cheap house.
Yeah.
And it was in Trustful. And so like great school, like Trustful's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. Trustful's not Mountain Brook, but it's pretty close as far as just the wanting the stuff there. Yeah. We flip it and the cost kept going up and he added this and I approved everything, but we ended up making $36,000 a piece. Mm-hmm. Now I know that I sound really bougie saying I made $36,000 and I was pissed, but when you think in your mind you're going to make 80 and you make 36, you get the check and you're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
But again, first world problems.
Yeah.
But the lending part of what we do, I love. Mm. I love the lending part of what we do because, number one, people want to use us. We're higher than the bank, but people want to use us because of speed. And I feel like we're providing a good service. I mean, I really, really do. Now, our rates are high, but like, you know that going in.
Right.
I'm not a shark. I'm not going to give it to you because you know that you can't repay it. Mm-hmm. But we only do first lien, and it's easy. It's easy money. It is the true definition of passive income. I wire money 6, 7, 8, 9 months later, I get money back. Mm-hmm. I don't fool with it. I send a text message every 4 months, every 3 months going, hey, everything going? You good?
Yeah.
And that's it.